like in 11 of Romans, that the Gentiles will be broken off. And in the last warning to the church, I will spew thee out of my mouth. And people don't believe this. They drift further and further away from truth as a people. Can Israel or Christians rejoice in their backslidden condition? Well, that's getting into another chapter that we have. Yes, we did cover that chapter, didn't we? Do we?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Well, you help me in between the two of us. We'll try to keep it straight. All right. Rejoice not, O Israel, for joy as other people, for thou hast gone a-whoring from thy God. Thou hast loved a reward on every corn floor. And the Lord tells us to rejoice in the Lord. But Israel, the 10 tribes, had gone so far from God, and they loved a reward, that is, from their gods, up on every threshing floor. I'm going to turn to Jeremiah 22:21 for just a moment and read it. My Bible flipped right open to it. I spake unto thee in thy prosperity, but thou saidest, I will not hear. This hath been thy manner from thy youth, that thou obeyedest not my voice. Notice, I spake unto thee in thy prosperity. Now, in the time of Jeroboam that was on the scene when Hosea prophesied, Israel was prosperous. And we will find in this, as we find in Moses and elsewhere, that when God's people prospered, they forgot the Lord. You know, in the natural, poverty is conducive to health, a certain measure of it. I have observed that. Two of the oldest people I ever knew were two of the poorest people I ever knew. Both were widows. Both reared families when there was absolutely no governmental aid. And one of them lived to be over 100. The other one lived to be nearly 100. So when you have to trust God day by day, that's good if that's God's orderings. And for pity's sake, if God prospers you, keep victories. Take victories. Sometimes it's a lot harder to take victories over wealth than it is poverty. Sometimes, because we can, we will. A man that was a good friend of mine, I knew him as a minister for many years. I knew him when he had nothing. Then I saw him when he was able to drive the kind of a car he wanted to buy. He said to me, Brother Franklin, money makes a difference in you. But does it have to? So they were rejoicing in the wrong things. And this is a tendency always with people. They shall not dwell in the Lord's land, but Ephraim shall return to Egypt, and they shall eat unclean things in Assyria. Now they return to Egypt in this sense to try to make a covenant with them against Assyria, but Assyria carried them captive. Let's turn to the 17th chapter of the book of 2 Kings for just a moment, and you can see that they were trying to make a covenant I think I gave you the wrong chapter, but we'll read it. The 12th chapter of Ahaz, king of Judah, began Hoshea the son of Elah to reign in Samaria over Israel 9 years. He did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. And the third verse, against him came up Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, and Hoshea became his servant and gave him presents. And the king of Assyria found conspiracy in Hoshea, for he had sent messengers to So, king of Egypt, and brought no present to the king of Assyria. Now, this, in Isaiah 30, this comes years later, many years later, but notice that Israel, or Judah, did the same thing. This chapter is a warning against an alliance with Egypt. And there is a verse here, if I can see it, where he said, Therefore have I cried concerning this, their strength is to sit still, that is, don't go to Egypt. They went anyway, and later on, part of Judah did go back into Egypt. But at this time, this was many years before, yeah, it was something near the same time, but this was Judah that Isaiah was talking to, and not Ephraim. The fourth verse says, They shall not offer wine offerings to the Lord, neither shall they be pleasing unto him. Their sacrifice shall be on them as the bread of mourners, All that eat thereof shall be polluted, for their bread for their soul shall not come into the house of the Lord. They were going to be carried into captivity, and they couldn't bring their offerings to the house of the Lord. And we'll have more about Egypt later. But he begins to picture to them what it's going to be like. The bread of mourners evidently was not acceptable to the Lord. All that ate it would be defiled. But notice the bread for their soul, that is the sacrifices that were offered for their souls, could not be brought into the house of the Lord. Now notice this question. What will you do in the solemn day, in the day of the feast of the Lord? For lo, they're gone because of destruction. Egypt shall gather them up. In other words, certain feasts were to be spent around the tabernacle of the Lord. They were going to be in captivity. And what would they do in the solemn day? And we don't need to hold a club over our heads. The Lord has forgiven us, and we're right with the Lord. And the Lord doesn't have anything against us if we're yielding to him. Take this precious old song, Perfect Submission. All is at rest. Is there any real rest without the perfect submission? You know there isn't, and so do I. I surrender all. Now, but at the same time, we have to recognize the fact, and I have seen people, all the people that I've known, I wish I had. A man right in this town, he came to church perhaps one or two times after I went to Weston, wouldn't take any interest in this town in a hospital. He said, I wish I could live my life over. There comes a time, and opportunities neglected and slighted. Well, you know the old saying, if you don't want what you need, someday you will need what you want. Remember the song? It was written because of an incident right here in Kansas City. A man fell from a scaffolding and was fatally injured. And among his last words, oh, if mother or sister were here. Does somebody have a Bible? No. Can anybody pray? No. So the song says, only a word, only a prayer, only a word from that book so dear. Oh, that mother or sister were here. Only a prayer to comfort and cheer. But you see, he didn't want what he needed, and the time came when he needed what he wanted, but he couldn't have it. He died in that condition. Maybe he prayed for himself, I do not know, but the heading of the song tells the story. I haven't seen it in a number of years. But what would they do when they were carried captive? When the feast days came, how would they keep them? When the Sabbath came, how would they observe it? They were going to be slaves. They couldn't say, well, it's time for us to knock off. He said in the sixth verse, Egypt shall gather them up, Memphis shall bury them, meaning they would go back to Egypt and they would die and be buried there. The pleasant places for their silver nettles shall possess them. Thorns shall be in their tabernacles, speaking of waste. That is, you know, you usually keep thorns out of the way. The days of visitation are come, the days of recompense are come. Notice the days of visitation here have reference to judgment. Notice this in Luke 19. This is when Jesus came inside of Jerusalem and wept over it. And in the 41st verse, when he was come near, he beheld the city and wept over it, saying, if thou hadst known, even thou, at least in this thy day, the things which belong unto thy peace. Now this is talking to Israel too, or Judah. But now they're hid from thine eyes. The days will come, or shall come, upon thee, that thine enemies shall cast a trench about thee, and compass thee about, and keep thee in on every side, and shall lay thee even with the ground, and thy children within thee, and they shall not leave in thee one stone upon another. Here's why. Because thou knewest not the time of thy visitation. You remember the word that is used of Judas, his bishopric let another take? That word bishopric is the same word here translated visitation. It has a different meaning. Here it means a visitation of grace. But back here in Hosea, it means, well, now they didn't know the time that God was visiting them. And I might tell you and take it seriously, it is said of David, he served his generation. This is my time and your time. It isn't going to be run by again. A woman said to me one time, run that by again. I didn't understand it, meaning repeat what you said. So I repeated it. But life isn't going to be run by again. There may be other opportunities come, but they won't be the same opportunities. Every day that isn't lived for the Lord is lost, and it won't come back. You can backslide. You can get back in fellowship with the Lord. You can take up, so to speak, where you left off, but you've lost something. I've noticed an interesting thing. You may remember that in the 40s and 50s, people supposedly had oil on their hands. You may remember it. There was a lot of it. I mean, a lot of that theory. One fellow said he had so much oil on his hands, he could scarcely type. And, well, I knew a fellow that backslid during that time. And years later, he came back to the Lord. And he wanted to take up right where he started also. He started out by having oil on his... Now, these things come and go in Pentecost. In the late 40s, it was the fast and demons. Everything was a demon. It was almost a case where there was a demon under the pillows and under the cushions. And then prophecy kind of took over. And those things have come and gone. But anyway, this is our time, and we don't have to get carried away with those things. It's our day. It's God's time of visiting us. But here in Hosea, he is visiting in judgment. The days of visitation are come. The days of recompense are come. Israel shall know it. The prophet is a fool. The spiritual man is mad. Whether this was the people saying or whether it was actually a case. Anyway, Jesus and Paul, it is said of both of them that they were mad. He is mad, why hear ye him? Paul, much learning doth make thee mad, for the multitude of thine iniquity and the great hatred. The watchman of Ephraim was with my God, but the prophet is a snare. Now Isaiah and Jeremiah have things to say about the false prophets. You may remember the prophet that contradicted Jeremiah. Jeremiah said the people were going to stay in Babylon, and this man said, thus saith the Lord. I think he said in 2 years they'll all be restored. And Jeremiah said, amen. That's what he wanted. The Lord sent him back to the man, and he said, you're going to die because you've taught the people to trust in a lie. And that year he died. The prophets are a snare of a fowler in all ways and hatred, all his ways and hatred in the house of his God. How deeply corrupt the human heart can become. Well, the next verse says, they have deeply corrupted themselves as in the days of Gibeah. I would like to take time to cite you to the days of Gibeah. We won't dwell there, but this is back in the book of Judges. It's one of the horrible scenes in the history of Israel. A young man, a Levite, had gone and gotten himself a concubine. She ran away. He started to bring her back home. It's in the 19th chapter of Judges. And he wouldn't stay in a city of the Gentiles, a heathen, so he went to a city of the Benjamites. And they took his concubine and kept her all night. And the poor thing came back to the door and died. And can you imagine it? He cut her in 12 pieces and sent her out to all the tribes of Israel to tell them what had happened. And battles ensued, and they came near annihilating the tribe of Benjamin. There were only 600 men left in the whole tribe. And then the things they had to do. To get wives for them, they went and destroyed a whole village and got the girls for them. And then they still lacked 200, so they had them kidnap 200 girls and take them with them. And this is really a horrible time in Israel's history. And notice that the prophet says, they have deeply corrupted themselves in the days of Gibeah. Now somebody said this, sin never dies a natural death. It has to be judged or it goes on and on. Now this was back before Israel had a king. It was back before Samuel and Eli, back before the days of David. And now the Lord says, still doing, just like they did in the days of Gibeah. And how early in church history the various things came in. The dead forms, the unrealities, when there is not reality and people want to be religious, they will bring in something. A man cracked a joke one time, and I think he half meant it. He said, I guess we can take up an offering, at least that's religious. And I had a part in a wedding in a Catholic church one time. I read the scriptures, and the things that that priest went through as he took the rings, and there was a Monsignor, as they call them, I won't call them that because it means my Lord. He was present, and he said to the priest, you really did do a good job. My goodness. I told you about being a church in a church in Luxembourg. Around the walls, they had 13 confessional booths. Can you imagine that many people confessing and a church big enough that it took that many priests to serve it? Father Schinicke's book, 50 Years in the Church of Rome, he tells about, I don't remember what they called them, but they would perform them for 25 cents, and they came in so fast that the priests could send them to France and get them done for 15 cents. And they did. They were making a lot of money out of the deal. Now, 10 cents doesn't sound like much, but if you're selling thousands and thousands, well, you've got quite an income. Now, whatever else you say, that's false. The consummation will be Revelation 17 and 18. I thought, as I was reading today of Ephraim, the 12th chapter, well, after I came here tonight, I was looking at it. Ephraim feedeth on the wind. You know what that system feeds on? A horrid diet, the blood of the saints. Saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints. Didn't use it literally, but just killed the people of God. I found Israel like grapes in the wilderness. Like refreshing. I saw your fathers as the first ripe in the fig tree at her first time, but they went after Baal Peor and separated themselves unto that shame, and their abominations were according as they loved. Now again, God goes back to the book of Numbers, Numbers 22. You have to read through 31, I believe, to get the whole story. Balak, the son of Zippor, hired Balaam to curse Israel. God wouldn't let him do it. And so he advised the king of Moab and the Midianites to call Israel to the sacrifice of their gods. That was Baal. Peor was a mountain nearby or a hill. This should read Baal of Peor. And it was like this. There are things, the young virgins were devoted to prostitution, and that was the shame associated with it. This was originally why Babylon was called the mother of harlots. So this is another reference to their history. They defiled themselves like they did at Gibeah. They went to Baal Peor and separated themselves under that shame, and their abominations were according as they loved. As for Ephraim, their glory shall fly away like a bird from the birth, from the womb, from the conception. Their children will die, as we will learn later. And God, you remember this expression in Romans, the goodness and the severity of God. On thee which fell goodness, but severity on them. And it's hard for us to realize what men will do when God turns them loose. Adolf Hitler is an example of such. So was Benito Mussolini. So was Joseph Stalin, and so are the Russians. There doesn't seem to be a compunction about the fact that they killed over 200 people out of war. They had no chance of defending themselves. They just shot them down. It is believed that Joseph Stalin starved 5 million people to death. The war that Hitler perpetrated, they keep bringing the number upward. I think in the 50s they were saying 39,000 or million. I think they have it up now into the 50s that died as a result of the Second World War. This is what men will do. And incidentally, as you know, approximately 6 million Jews died in Hitlerite dominions. Though they bring up their children, yet will I bereave them, that there shall not be a man left. Can you imagine that? A missionary went to Paraguay one time many years ago. I heard his testimony at the tabernacle, and he said when he went down there, the country was run by women and boys. The reason was all the men had been killed off in a war. I've never forgotten anything. It's one thing about the pictures that he showed. The women smoked cigars. That always tickled me. You can imagine seeing a woman with a cigarette, but a woman smoking a pipe or a cigar looks funny to me. The 12th verse, though they bring up their children, yet will I bereave them, that there shall not be a man left. Now, it's my opinion that the reason later in the Bible, no, earlier in the Bible, we read of the seven women that will take hold of one man's garment and say, let us be called by thy name to take away our reproach, is simply that there won't be enough men left to go around. You may remember the article that appeared in the magazine right after the war. The German women's appeal to America, give us some of your men. They had lost so many. I've never been quite satisfied with the interpretation of this statement, I will make a man more precious than a wedge of gold, whether it refers to Christ or whether it means the scarcity of men. During the war past, there was Brother O.W. Webb pastored in Bristol, Oklahoma, and the men that weren't taken, they went to other towns to work in defense plants. And he said to me one time, my meetings look like a widow's convention. Nothing but women. And when the men were being grabbed so wholesale during the war, I remember a cartoon with three expressions. First one said, what a man. And the next one said, what, a man? And the third one said, what's a man? Surely did break things up. I had a good friend that went away for 3 years. And when he came back, he and his wife were just strangers. They tried to make a go of it, but just didn't work. They separated. That's what war does. Yea, all woe also to them when I depart from them. Now, we can't quite imagine what it's like. I trust that we will never experience the time when we lay down the shield of faith and lay aside the sword of the Spirit and lay aside the breastplate of righteousness, and God lifts his protecting hand. If I would have to just close my mind against the dangers on the highway alone if I didn't believe that God was with me. And the conditions that we live in now, human life is considered so cheap. I would be afraid of what could come my way, but I'm trusting God. Ephraim, as I saw Tyrus, now Tyrus, as you know, was the wicked heathen city to the north, is planted in a pleasant place, but Ephraim shall bring forth children to the murderer. What a judgment this is, to have it actually said to you by somebody that you could believe. You're going to grow up children, but they're going to be murdered. Israel's trouble was that they didn't believe their prophets. And then what would the Lord give them? Well, they would be barren. No children. All their wickedness is in Gilgal. Gilgal was a great place at one time. If you will remember when they crossed the River Jordan back in the days of Joshua, they stopped at Gilgal. The word means a rolling. There they observed the rite of circumcision, and the scripture says they rolled the reproach of Egypt away. That's the language that is used. All their wickedness is in Gilgal. Now it was the place of idolatrous worship. For there I hated them, a loathing, an abhorrence. Sister Eggers told me about a scene tonight. Did you ever meet somebody that you just didn't have the grace to deal with him? I went to see a couple one time and I wanted to lead them to the Lord. A few times in my life I've met things that just revolted me. And that man began to tell me his ungodliness right before his five small children. Why, I've rented my wife out to other men. And how do you deal with a case like that? I could tell you other cases that I've come up against that somehow it was just so revolting. Now, I know God can forgive things, but it was just so revolting that it was extremely hard for me to take a victory and deal with somebody in grace. Their wickedness and guilt, for there I hated them. For the wickedness of their doings, I will drive them out of mine house. I will love them no more. All their princes are revolters. We see things very bad at times. We haven't seen things quite as bad as they were in the days of Noah, when there was only one family that feared God. In the days of Elijah, now you imagine a man going around over the country, stopping the heavens, calling fire down from heaven to burn up a sacrifice. praying until there came a mighty rain, raising a child from the dead. How many miracles he had, great miracles. And in all that nation, mind you, God said, I have 7,000 men that haven't bowed their knees to Baal nor kissed his lips. And you would think that a man like that would get 70,000 in one revival meeting. But you know what the results were? Do you continually marvel at the human race? I have said this, that just from a natural viewpoint, one of the greatest arguments that there is a devil is the fact that the human race perpetually seeks its own destruction. Did you know that actually the common man of the street will argue with you that cigarette won't help, won't hurt him, that it won't hurt you, this is all a lot of malarkey. And with everything around us now, 9 million drunkards, we call them alcoholics in our day, or they have a problem. A Methodist pastor in our town, not there now, he came to Kansas City, an alcoholic. Why do they do it? All they have to do is look around them and know what it will do. And yet, they will do it. Because there is a devil. And men seek their destruction. I have said to people at times, you pour in your body something that will cause your body to react in a way that if you poured something causing the same reaction in my car, I'd have you arrested. Treat our cars better than, I mean as a people now, better than we do our bodies. All revolters, against whom? Against God. Ephraim is smitten, their root is dried up. They shall bear no fruit, yea, though they bring forth, yet will I slay even the beloved fruit of their womb. My God shall cast them away because they did not hearken unto him. Now notice this statement. They shall be wanderers among the nations. I've heard the prodigal son compared to the wandering Jew. Isn't there a plant called the wandering Jew? A little house plant? And everywhere I've ever been in the world, there have been Jews. I was in Jamaica, a Jew owned the telephone company. I've forgotten whether Madras or Bombay, India, there's a large settlement of Jews. As you know, they were all over Europe. A Jew told me that the tribe of Dan perished in the Spanish Inquisition. They didn't, but God knows where they are. I knew a missionary from China and told about a Jew that lost his mind. The communists had taken over. This man had fled from Hitlerite Germany to China for security, and then the communists came in, and when they took him over, he lost his mind, and he said at that time, when anyone was mentally deranged, they destroyed him because they said he was a public menace, so they killed him. They are wanderers among the nations. And isn't it sad how they bring things on themselves, reaping what they sow. Paul's principle in Galatians 2 or 6, now he's speaking of giving, but he said it's a principle. Be not deceived, God is not mocked. For whatsoever man soweth, that shall he also reap. I didn't know him personally. I knew some of his friends. A man in Oklahoma, he pastored a large church in Oklahoma City, and he fell in love with his secretary. He arranged it with the secretary's wife. They traded wives. Each one married the other one's wife. He didn't get very far. He had a plane, and he and his second wife started off the ground one day, and the plane crashed and killed him. He reaped what he sowed. Israel is an empty vine, the 10th chapter. He bringeth forth fruit unto himself. According to the multitude of his fruit, he hath increased the altars. According to the goodness of his land, they have made goodly images. In other words, the more prosperity, the more idolatry. And isn't this the way of people? I have found it so. And even the Lord's people. I remember a case of a fellow that promised the Lord if he'd give him a good crop, what he would do for the Lord. He was a farmer, naturally. And the Lord gave him a good crop. And that fall, he bought himself a brand new car. Now, that was back in the 20s when buying a brand new car was something for a farmer. Most farmers weren't able to do it in our part of the country. And an increase of goods many times increases bad conditions. Their heart is divided. Did you ever see somebody with a divided heart? I heard a young man testify one time. He had been an epileptic, and he'd been saved, and on a Sunday morning, somebody came along and wanted him to go fishing. Well, he did so want to go fishing, but finally he went to church, and on that Sunday, the Lord healed his epilepsy. He testified about that. A divided heart. Well, somebody turn to Psalms 86:11. Okay, let's take 1 Kings 18:21 and Matthew 6:24. Somebody takes James, let's see, what verse is that? That's in James 4, I believe. I'll turn to that. Let's have the passage from the Psalms prayer.
Teach me thy way, O Lord. I will walk in thy truth. Unite my heart to fear thy name.
Did you ever pray that way? Unite my heart. Somebody said to me some time ago, now when you get it all together, and you know what it means to get everything, to get it organized, and I can just imagine his condition when he said, unite my heart to fear thee. Perhaps something was pulling him the wrong way. Now let's have the passage in 1 Kings 18:21. They were still halting between two opinions. They weren't sure of their ground. Halting between two opinions. Read Matthew 6:24.
No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon.
That's quite a statement, isn't it? You can't serve two masters. Did you ever see people? Now, I saw a man one time that was thrown between the pulling of two different people. And he used this expression to me, I'm between two fires. He was being pulled two ways. And the eighth verse of James 4 says, cleanse your hands, ye sinners, and purify your hearts, ye double-minded. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. I spoke a moment ago about the fact that in the early 50s and thereabout, demons were the order of the day. And there was a fellow holding a meeting, and to him, everything was a demon. And a double-minded man was demon-possessed to him. Well, a man that hasn't judged his old man, he has a new creation, hasn't judged his old man, he may be double-minded. But all of these others indicate that there can be a pulling both ways. Their heart is divided. Now shall they be found faulty. He shall break down their altars. He shall spoil their images. Isn't it a solemn fact that the whole human race, every individual, will eventually give an account of himself to God? A great leader of the past, when asked what was his most solemn thought, he said the fact that I must stand before God. And it's sobering, even to us. Now, I'm a Christian. I know that I'm saved. As long as there was a woman in this town one time, old Mother Biter, I doubt if any of you, now that the name rings a bell, but she had quite a testimony in Brother Copley's meeting. The time came when her mind became weakened and she began to doubt many of the truths that she had formerly stood for. Now, that's not uncommon. I've known it to happen a number of times with devoted people. But as long as I'm in my right mind and have the scriptures, I know that I'm saved. Now, my mind might wander. It might become feeble. I know I'm just totally confident I'm going to heaven. I totally believe that I'm sealed for the day of redemption. I know that I have a great intercessor, a shepherd, a head, a high priest, an advocate. But I've seen people take advantage of this. I don't want to do it. May I retain a few things in my life. Winning Christ, that I may finish my course with joy, is another one. That when I give an account, I may do it with joy and not with grief. And it's possible, I knew a woman, I didn't hear her make the statement. She had two sons that were just getting started in the ministry. She made the statement, I'm willing to sacrifice my place in the bride of Christ for the sake of my two sons that are ministers. I don't know how she thought she could help them by that, but that isn't quenching the Lord's thirst, is it? Incidentally, both of her sons, though they boasted about the security of the believer, later joined the Assemblies of God. And so keep certain things behind the heart or before the heart, And if it seemed to be the costly thing, I was told many years ago that a man in this town came to Brother Copley and told him, Brother Copley, if you'll let up on certain things, don't preach so hard on the security of the believer, don't emphasize the two creations and such, we'll put across the biggest thing that's ever been put across in Kansas City. He was a wealthy man. Brother Copley's reply was, I am totally dependent on God, and if I don't preach the truth, the Lord won't help me. I understand the man found a man who would go along with him, but that's easy to do. You can find what you want. Their heart is divided. If your choice makes you seem to be little, be with God. Now, people say you can compromise and get crowds. That isn't always true. Many people have compromised and haven't gotten crowds. But if it comes to crowds, the Catholic Church has it. And we might find what we're looking for. And God may even give us what we're living for, what we're looking for, to show us that it's not what we're looking for. God granted Israel's request, but sent leanness into their souls. And the Lord keep us from being divided in here. I can put on a front if I were so minded. It would be hard for me to be a hypocrite. I don't think I ever tried it. But you see, there are different ways to be a hypocrite. You see, when Peter turned his back on the Gentiles down at Antioch, our translators had a lot of respect for Peter. They said, even Barnabas was drawn away with their dissimulation. You check the word. Even Barnabas was drawn away with their hypocrisy. That's another kind of hypocrisy. I'm standing up for my convictions, but Peter wasn't. He was scared. I'm sorry to say that he was. Well, going, I think we'll stop now for a little while and come. For now they shall say, we have no king, because we feared not the Lord. What then should a king do for us? The reason they had no king was they didn't yield to God, and the king of Assyria took their king away as well as themselves. Sometime at your leisure, read 2 Kings 17, the sins for which they lost their position. Let's glance back there just a moment to the 2 Kings, the 17th chapter. This outlines the sins for which God sent them into captivity. Beginning with the 7th verse, it was so that the children of Israel had sinned against the Lord their God, which had brought them up out of the land of Egypt. And the 8th verse, they walked in the statutes of the heathen whom the Lord cast out. The 9th verse, the children of Israel did secretly those things that were not right against the Lord their God. They built them high places in all their cities. The 10th verse said they set them up images and groves. The 11th verse, there they burnt incense in all the high places. The 12th verse, they served idols. The 13th verse, yet the Lord testified against Israel. And the 14th verse, notwithstanding, they would not hear. The 15th verse, acted his statutes and his covenant that he made with their fathers and his testimonies which he testified against them. They followed vanity and became vain and went after the heathen. The 16th verse, they left all the commandments of the Lord their God and made them molten images, even two calves, and made a grove, and worshipped all the host of heaven and served Baal. They caused their sons and their daughters to pass through the fire. That was in connection with Moloch. They used divination and enchantments, sold themselves to do evil in the sight of the Lord. The 18th verse says the Lord was very angry. The 19th verse, Judah kept not the commandments of the Lord. But that's another story. I wanted you to see why the children of Israel were cast out. The 22nd verse says the children of Israel walked in all the sins of Jeroboam, which he did. They departed not from it. And as I stated earlier, sin doesn't die a natural death. It has to be judged. If a person will leave it alone, sin will dominate his life. Whatever he can do, he cannot help. They have spoken words swearing falsely and making a covenant, not only with God, but with the king of Assyria and with the king of Egypt. Thus judgment springeth up as hemlock in the furrows of the field. Hemlock was poison. The inhabitants of Samaria shall fear because of the calves of Bethaven. Bethaven is a mockery word for Bethel. Bethel was where one of the calves was, meaning house of God. But Bethaven means house of vanity or house of an idol. For the people thereof shall mourn over it, and the priests thereof that rejoiced on it for the glory thereof, because it is departed from it. The word translated priests here is a word that is used only of the idolatrous priests. It isn't the word that's used for the regular priests of Israel. It shall be, the calves, of course, shall be carried into Assyria for a present to King Jerob, one of the kings of which we know little. Ephraim shall receive shame, and Israel shall be ashamed of his own counsel. Going back, for the glory thereof, it is departed from it. Does that bring a story to your mind? Do you remember when Eli's two sons were murdered by the Philistines and he fell off of a seat and broke his neck? One of his daughters-in-law gave birth to a child, and she called his name Ichabod, saying, "The glory has departed." The Ark of the Covenant was captured. As for Samaria, her king is cut off as the foam upon the water. How light and chaffy, unstable is foam. I had a hound, a beagle hound, one time, and I was up in the mountains in Colorado where the water was so cold, and the beaver had been at work up above, and there was a little bridge across this stream, wide enough for one, and the dog got in a hurry, and where all this stuff had floated down in the foam, it looked like solid ground. He came in a dead run, and when he hit that, he went clear under. He thought he was hitting solid ground, but that's the way it was with Israel. There was nothing solid there. As for Samaria, the king is cut off as the foam upon the water. The high places also of Avon, the sin of Israel, shall be destroyed. I'm going to read in connection with this a statement in Deuteronomy 9:21. Some of these statements that are made earlier come in so fittingly because it was the same God. Notice now what it is stated there. The high places also of Avon, the sin of Israel, that was the gods, shall be destroyed. Now notice what Moses said. And I took your sin, the calf which ye had made, and burnt it with fire, and stamped it, and ground it very small, even till it was as small as the dust, and I cast the dust thereof into the brook that descended out of the mount. Now notice what he called their sin, that calf that they made. You remember, they said to Aaron, "Up, make us gods, as far as this Moses, we know not what has become of him." And then you will notice another interesting incident. In 1 Kings, we'll read 1 Kings 12:28, referring back to the sins in their history. 1 Kings 12:28 says this. Now here's what Jeroboam said. The 26th verse, "Now shall the kingdom return to the house of David. If this people go up to sacrifice in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, then shall the heart of this people turn again unto their Lord, even unto Rehoboam, king of Judah, and they shall kill me and go again to Rehoboam, king of Judah. Wherefore the king took counsel and made two calves of gold and said unto them, It is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Behold thy gods, O Israel, who had brought thee up out of the land of Egypt." Wasn't that a bold lie? Probably because many of the Egyptians' gods were like calves or like oxen. They were copying the heathen. They had other gods. You remember Stephen quotes the prophet and charges them with that before they stoned him to death. But he made the two calves, and you remember Aaron made a calf, and they were probably copying the Egyptians. And he set the one in Bethel, and the other put he in Dan. He chose Bethel because of so many sacred memories associated there. This thing became a sin, for the people went to worship before the one, even unto Dan. It made a house of high places, made priests to the lowest of the people, which were not of the sons of Levi. And we read upwards of 20 times of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, that made Israel to sin. What a sad history to have it joined to your name. And so this is how these two calves started, and in all their following history now, up till their captivity, they were never free from that silly calf worship. It shall be carried to Jerob, Ephraim receives shame, and then The seventh verse is, for Samaria, her king is cut off as the foam. The eighth verse, the high places also of Avon, the sin of Israel, shall be destroyed. The thorn and the thistle shall come up on their altars. They shall say to the mountains, cover us, and to the hills, fall on us. I believe you will remember Luke 23:30. You know, the Lord can speak of these things because he knew. And he can reveal truth along any line, down the way, anywhere. Luke 22:30, he said, then shall they begin to say to the mountains, fall on us, and to the hills, cover us. And then I will read this one in the sixth chapter of the book of Revelation. Not that we're not all familiar with it, but just kind of refresh our memories on it. The sixth chapter of Revelation, the last verse. Well, the 16th verse, not the last. Said to the mountains and rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the Copleys to sing a song. I dreamed that at last I should look on his face. And when he came to that word look, he would sustain the note long. And he would change it to gaze sometimes, that I would gaze on his face. But these fellows are going to want to hide from his face. And well might they. If you wanted to read in the ninth chapter, you read of men seeking death and death fleeing from them. The ninth verse, another reference to Gibeah. O Israel, thou hast sinned from the days of Gibeah. There they stood in the battle in Gibeah against the children of iniquity. Battle in Gibeah against the children of iniquity did not overtake them. It is my desire that I should chastise them, and the people shall be gathered against them when they shall bind themselves in their two furrows, like a going into captivity, like two cattle being bound to plow. Ephraim is as an heifer that is taught, loves to tread out the corn, but I passed over upon her fair neck, that is, I put a yoke on her. I will make Ephraim to ride, Judah shall plow, and Jacob shall break his clods. I do not doubt, but it is speaking of their captivity. And he says, sow to yourselves in righteousness, reap in mercy. Break up your fallow ground, for it is time to seek the Lord till he come and rain righteousness upon us. Time to seek the Lord, but they didn't seek. Seek the Lord while he may be found, we read. You have plowed wickedness, you have reaped iniquity. You have eaten the fruit of lies, because thou didst trust in thy way, in the multitude of thy mighty men. My, how people will put their confidence. Maybe you, I don't have a television, but when I go out with my sons, I look at the news, and tonight they showed a concern that had gone bankrupt, and one man had deposited all of his money with them, $80,000, guaranteed 12% interest annually. Many others, one concern that had developed a good business, put all their savings in it, now bankrupt. Well, they trusted in their way and in the multitude of thy mighty men. A horse is a vain thing for the day. It's a vain thing to put confidence in princes. A horse is a vain thing in the day of battle. Of God it is said, he taketh not pleasure in the legs of a man. There was a boy in Bible school one year, and he was quite muscular, and he was always tensing his leg and showing what muscles he had. And invariably Carson Richards would say, he taketh not pleasure in the legs of a man. Trust in the multitude of thy mighty men. We're fixed up. We're all set. Look at our army. You may have heard that fella make a statement the other day. He said, gather up arrowheads, collect. He said, the next war won't be fought with arrows, but the one following that will. Well, we may think we're armed to the teeth, but you see somebody else is armed to the teeth. It isn't a matter that we don't have the armament. I told you, I think at different times, what the Scientific American gave as a book review that said, if we're hit first, we'll lose 15 million people the first day. A long war would be 30 days. A short war would be 3 days. This is an atomic war. You know, just a few bombs can destroy, make uninhabitable every one of our big cities. Well, where is our confidence? Somebody asked a preacher one time when they had passed the collection plate, is your confidence in the plate or in the Lord? Their trust is in their mighty men. Therefore shall a tumult arise among the people. This, of course, was war. All thy fortresses shall be spoiled. During the war past, the French had, I believe, what they call the Maginot Line. I drove by this, or my son-in-law drove by it. I was in the car, a part of it. We didn't see all of it, of course. The French had all of this, these big guns placed between them and Germany. And it looked like they were well equipped. But do you know what the Germans did? They bypassed every bit of it. They fought their way through Poland, and then they came down through the Low Countries and came into France from that direction. And when the Lord decides to put somebody down, they go down. Babylon surrounded Jerusalem one time, and then they departed, and Jeremiah warned them. He said if all the Babylonians were wounded men, they'd rise up and take this city. God had decided that the city was going to go down. Therefore shall a tumult rise, and they'll be put down as Shalmon. This was really Shalmaneser, it is believed. Spoiled Beth Arbel. We do not know just what happened. There are things that God doesn't tell us fully. Like, for example, he said to Jeremiah to go and look at what I did at Shiloh. But he doesn't tell us what he did at Shiloh. That's where the tabernacle of the Lord was at one time. The mother was dashed in pieces upon her children. The utter heartlessness of people always amazes me. The mother and the child, notice, dashed in pieces, picked up and thrown against the rocks. So shall Bethel do unto you because of your great wickedness. And isn't it interesting that what God calls great wickedness isn't considered great wickedness by people? In a morning shall the king of Israel utterly be cut off. Just in that short time, it doesn't take long. When Israel was a child, and I loved him and called my son out of Egypt. This is quoted in Matthew about 2:15, I believe, and applied to Christ. And sometimes the same scripture is applied to Christ that is applied to Israel. They were both supposed to be servants of God. Christ was totally the servant of God. But notice, when he was a child, I loved him. As they called them, so they went from them. They sacrificed unto Balaam and burned incense to graven images. Now you look back at the history of the church, how early the church turned aside. How quickly they began to burn incense and keep relics, a bone. The Kansas City Star said one time that there are enough pieces of the cross scattered around in Christendom to build a church. The Catholic Church answered that. It was so important that the Lord increased the pieces so everybody could have a piece. Now, I'm going to tell you the truth. Of course, the wood has perished generations ago. But if I had the very cross on which Jesus Christ was crucified, do you realize that, spiritually speaking, there would be no value there whatsoever? We're reminded of what Hezekiah, I believe it was, did. When he brought about his reform, he took the serpent that Moses had made hundreds of years before and destroyed it. He called it Nehushtan, which means a bit of bronze, because until that day the children of Israel burned incense to it. No wonder God marvels at man. I do too. Burning incense to a snake. And he said, I have learned by experience that the Lord hath blessed me for your sake. Carries the thought of serpents. I taught Israel also to go, take them by their arms, but they knew not that I healed them. Like the Lord just said, he'd called them out of Egypt as a son. And now, like you take a baby, my daughter's son was just on the verge of walking, and where I live, you can come out of the kitchen through the living room, through a bedroom, into the kitchen, and around and around. And she left him at our house for 3 days, and I'd take him by the hand, and we'd go around and around and around, and when she came back for him, he could walk. Well, now that's the figure the Lord is using. I took them by the arms, and Sister Bodie used to say, the first 2 years or so that you're saved, the Lord carries you around on a pillow, and you can remember how easily he answered our prayers and how we gloried in it, and we came to be quite superior in our own estimation. I was running a Bible school one time, and a fellow that was just getting out in the ministry said, do you have any invitations to hold revival meetings? I wasn't reviling. I said, no, I don't. Oh, I have, I think he said, three of them. And as far as I know, that was back in the 50s. That was the last revival meetings he ever held. He just didn't have what it took. But he was quite carried away with himself. I drew them with the cords of a man, with bands of love, how God reached out and took hold of Israel, and he takes hold of us the same way. I was to him as they that take off the yoke of their jaws, that is, they were not to muzzle the ox that treaded out the corn. I laid meat unto them, that is, I fed them. He shall not return in the land of Egypt. Now earlier we read that he would, but that was to make a covenant. But the Assyrian shall be his king because they refuse to return to the Lord. I read a moment ago how Hoshea, back in 2 Kings 17:4, was taken by the king of Assyria. The 10 tribes went in to Assyria, 720 B.C. The Judah didn't go into captivity and didn't begin to go until 606 B.C. The sword shall abide on his cities. It'll just continue there. Shall consume his branches and devour them because of their own counsels. Lean not to thine own understanding unless it is an understanding given to you of God. You see, there isn't anything in me to guide me. People say, let your conscience be your guide. Jesus said, the time will come when he that killeth you will think that he doeth God a service. Could their conscience be their guide? Your conscience, you're to live, you're to regard it and respect it, but be sure that it's educated by the Word of God. My people are bent to backsliding from me, though they call them to the Most High, and none at all will exalt him. They are like the Israelites, see to thine own house, David. They're bent on backsliding from me. They're bent on drawing back, slightly indifferent. Let us be aware. One time when I was much younger, I sensed that the Word of God wasn't thrilling me like it had before. And I took my Bible and spent almost a day just seeking the Lord. If you sense that something is going wrong, now I know a preacher that he was out of victory a lot of the time, and he said, if the Lord doesn't do and so and so, I won't preach his old book. Now, if I ever come to that point that I will take such an attitude or harbor it, the Lord help me to take my Bible and sense where I am and take care of the situation. How shall I give thee up, Ephraim? How reluctant the Lord is to chastise. I'm going to read Jeremiah 31:20 in connection with this. Is Ephraim my dear son? Is he a pleasant child? For since I spake against him, I do earnestly remember him still. Therefore my bowels are troubled for him. I will surely have mercy upon him, saith the Lord. And here, how shall I give thee up, Ephraim? How slow the Lord is to quit. When Ezekiel saw the cloud leave the temple, it arose and went to the threshold. Finally, it went to the mountain on the east side of Jerusalem. And the Lord is slow to wrath. Thank God that he is. Slow to anger, plenteous in mercy. If I can find the passage, I want to read it in this last chapter of 2 Chronicles. The 15th verse says, this was the captivity of Judah. This is 2 Chronicles 36:15. The Lord God of their fathers sent to them by his messengers, rising up betimes and sending, because he had compassion on his people and on his dwelling place. But they mocked the messengers of God, despised his words, and misused his prophets, until the wrath of the Lord arose against his people, till there was no remedy. Isaiah tried. Hosea tried. Jeremiah tried. Well, God is so slow to give up. I went to see a family one time until I got ashamed of myself, and I quit. And when I left Kansas City in 1950, he was pastoring a little church. The Lord didn't give up. I went to see Cecil Eaton until I was sure he was totally tired of me. I quit going. I resigned the church, but I hadn't yet moved out of town. He called me one morning early, 6 o'clock. He said, I just gave my heart to the Lord, and I wanted you to be the first one that knew it. I gave up, but the Lord didn't. How shall I deliver thee, Israel? How shall I give thee up? How shall I deliver thee? How shall I make thee as Adma? How shall I set thee as Zeboam? These were towns that were destroyed when Sodom and Gomorrah were wiped out. Mine heart is turned within me, my repentings are kindled together. Among other words, this word repentings means pity, mercy, compassion. I will not execute the fierceness of mine anger. I will not return to destroy Ephraim, for I am God and not man. The Holy One in the midst of thee, I will not enter into the city, that is, with judgment. On God, notice I am God and not man. I'm going to read Numbers 23:19. Now, we've been over this, and you're not ignorant of what it says, but this Balaam, false prophet, was made to say, God is not a man that he should lie, neither the son of man that he should repent. Hath he said, and shall he not do it? Or hath he spoken, and shall he not make it good? And then notice Isaiah 55 in going back toward Hosea. Just stop off there for a minute. 55, I believe about the 7th verse. Let the wicked forsake his way, and the righteous man his thoughts. And let him return unto the Lord, and he will have mercy upon him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. But notice, he gives the same type of a message that Hosea did. Let the wicked forsake his way, and the unrighteous man his thoughts. And God is not a man that he should lie. He leaps forward now. They shall walk after the Lord. He, that is the Lord, shall roar like a lion. When he shall roar, then the children shall tremble from the west. They shall tremble as a bird out of Egypt, and as a dove out of the land of Assyria, speaking of his regathering. I will place them in their houses, saith the Lord. Ephraim compassed me about. Now back to the what they were then. Compasseth me about with lies, and the house of Israel with deceit. But Judah yet ruleth with God and is faithful with the saints. God finds fault with them, but they were still more or less walking with God. They had had such men as Jehoshaphat, and they would have Uzziah and Hezekiah and Josiah. Now Ephraim's diet is that Ephraim feedeth on wind and followeth after the east wind. He daily increaseth lies and desolation. And they do make a covenant with the Assyrians, and oil is carried into Egypt, that is, to pay for the troubles that they were going to. They were hiring the enemy, hired lovers, he accused them earlier, and they made these false covenants. Now the Lord said Judah was yet with her God, but he said, the Lord hath a controversy with Judah, and will punish Jacob according to his ways, and according to his doings will he recompense him. Now he goes back again, way back. If you want to go clear back to Genesis 25, you will find the history. He took his brother by the heel in the womb, and by his strength he had power with God. The word Jacob means supplanter, a heel catcher. And there was a hint here that he was after the birthright, which he obtained, but it was his from the Lord. And notice this, by his strength he had power with God. Now there's a mysterious wrestling of Jacob with God back in God. And the angel in the 32nd chapter, this was the uncreated angel of Jehovah. Notice, he had power over the angel. Now I'm glad Hosea put this in. He prevailed, but how? He wept and made supplication unto him. God said to Paul, my strength is made perfect in weakness. Jacob was left alone. He was scared, so scared. He had heard that Esau was coming with 400 men, and he had nothing but a wife, four wives, and 11 children, and some servants. He didn't have an army, but it sounded like Esau was carrying his old grudge and he was coming to wipe out Jacob. And Jacob was really almost beside himself. And the Lord had promised him in that notable vision back in, that is when he had his dream, back in the 28th chapter of the ladder, when the Lord said, I'll be with you, I'll bring you again. And the Lord will usually give us something to stand on in our times of crisis. I spoke of my daughter the other night. She's past 40 now. She lives up in Virginia. But when she was a little girl, she was very much scared of storms. And it was storming pretty bad. And this was her, what she had tied to. Oh, praise the Lord. I know nothing's going to happen to me because the Lord wants me to grow up and become a missionary. So the Lord was definitely going to take care of her. Well, Jacob needed something at this time greatly. He greatly needed something to tie to. And he sought the Lord. And an angel wrestled with him. And he wept and made supplication unto him. He found him in Bethel, and there he spake with us. The promises that God made to Jacob were made to his followers, his descendants. And there he spake with us. But I do want you to notice how he prevailed. He wept and made supplication. That's how he had power over the angel. Even the Lord of hosts, the Lord is his memorial. We'll read Psalm 35:13 in connection with that statement. The Lord is his memorial. Isn't that an interesting statement? This is my memorial forever, the Lord said when he unfolded the name Jehovah to Moses. Gave you a wrong steer. Thy name, O Lord, endureth forever, and thy memorial, O Lord, throughout all generations. It's Psalm 135:13. His memorial seems to be his name. And I think that's always been very interesting to me, that he speaks of his name as his memorial. I had another text written down here. I'll see if it applies before I tell you to turn to it. No, I didn't. It was a different text written for other purposes, I suppose. Therefore, turn thou to thy God. Jacob did. Turn thou to thy God. Isn't it sad what it takes to turn people to God? My dear father was saved when he was a young man, but he had some relatives that made fun of him, and he dropped it out of his life. I could always tell he was tender toward the Lord, but he wasn't. He didn't walk with God. And one night, my father had been to the hospital, and I awakened. He had come home, and the family was all broken up, and he was praying. My sister had died. Isn't it sad that God has to use these things to cause people to turn to him? Keep mercy and judgment, and now notice this, and don't ever forget it, and wait on thy God continually. You learn as you go with the Lord that you belong to him. I have a lot of relatives in Oklahoma, and I haven't seen them in a good long while. I haven't been in my son's home in nearly 2 years. And I was thinking recently, well, I think I'll take off 2 weeks and just go down there and visit. But as the boy said, who said he would never go back to school, he said, I went back. I had a father. Well, I had a father, so I didn't go. I found he didn't want me to go. Wait continually. Wait on thy God continually. He is merciful. The balance, or he is a merchant. Incidentally, this word merchant is the same word translated Canaan or Canaanite, carrying the thought of a merchant. And he's applying this to them. The balances of the deceit are in his hand. He loveth to oppress. Part of his way. In the book of Deuteronomy, a man called this to my attention one time. Moses said to the children of Israel, it is the Lord giveth thee power to get wealth. He said, people may criticize the rest of the Bible, but that's one I think he said that they will believe. It is the Lord that giveth thee power. And it's almost comical to do business with. I went downtown one time with a Fred Knight. I don't know if that name rings a bell with you or not, but he delighted in having fun out of the Jews. They had secondhand stores and various kinds, and he argued with on over the price of a suitcase. The Jew asked quite a price for it, and he offered him $1.50, and he kept coming down. He finally said, give me your $1.50 and take the suitcase. And Brother Knight said, I'll look around. If I don't find anything better, I'll come back. He grabbed the suitcase and turned his back. Well, this says they love to oppress. I won't tell that story either. I started to tell it, but he's a merchant. The balances of deceit are in his hand. It is not, saith the seller, but when he is gone, he boasteth. In the book of Proverbs, he loveth to oppress, he loves to cheat. This is characteristic of the Orient. I read the story of a man that he was an Arab, and he came to this country, became very fluent in English, grew up in this country, had American ways, but he still was fluent in Arabic. And he went back over there, and they thought he was American. And he stopped at an Arab store, and the fellow said to his neighbor, "Now watch me take him to a cleaning in Arabic." He said, "I bought this for just thus and so over here, paid just so much for it, but watch me get it out of what I get out of him." And he understood him fully. When he presented it, he said, "I'm not going to give you that." He said, "You probably didn't pay any more than," he quoted to him what he had said, told him in English. But that's characteristic of the Orient. I read when they first had their trains, they would actually try to get people to come down on the price of the ticket. But this has been characteristic of the Jewish race. Perhaps they had to become that way to survive, I do not know. Ephraim said, "Yet I am become rich. I've found me out substance. In all my labors they shall find none iniquity in me, that they may sin." Another thing that developed it in them was in the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages, the kings wouldn't charge interest. That was a sin. But they would let the Jew charge the interest as much as he wanted, and then they'd tax him. And the Jews became financiers. "And I that am the Lord thy God from the land of Egypt will yet make thee to dwell in tabernacles in the days of the solemn feast." This is another prediction. "I have also spoken by the prophets. I have multiplied visions and used similitudes by the ministry of the prophets." Isaiah had to act out prophecies. Ezekiel acted them out. "Is there iniquity in Gilead? Yes, there surely was. Surely they are vanity. They sacrifice bullocks in Gilgal." That's where the two calves, that's where one of the calves was. "Yea, their altars are as heaps in the furrows of the field." Like you're cleaning a field and you stack up the rocks that you take away. Well, that's like their altars were. And Jacob fled in the country of Syria, and Israel served for a wife, and for a wife he kept sheep. And by a prophet the Lord brought Israel out of Egypt, and by a prophet was he preserved. Why didn't Israel now turn to the prophet? But they wouldn't do it. Ephraim provoked him to anger most bitterly. "Therefore shall he leave his blood upon him, and his reproach shall his Lord return upon him." It's another way of showing that they're going to reap what they sowed. His reproach will return upon him. Now, we will be finishing Hosea ere long, and we will start in the book of Amos. Now, if the time comes that you feel like you would rather turn to other prophets rather than the minor prophets, just speak up. We could turn to Ezekiel, Jeremiah, or Isaiah. I'll just mention that